Help hurt them.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. You are?
Allison.
Miss Allison from Raleigh.
Yes. I don't have a business check with me, but when I get my will, is there any kind of...
Okay, well, slide up here, okay? The question is, I don't have a business check. That doesn't matter. As long as the business reimburses your credit card, I use a personal credit card for everything. And then I have the business reimburse me for the business expenses.
Okay. How much would you charge for an update? I bought it about 15 years ago.
We have several of you who bought it 15 years ago and want an update. Just call my office and they'll work with you. Okay? You don't need to buy it now.
And we can adjust the form.
Yeah, who needs a form?
And then how do we file them? We have to file them with a lawyer once we fill
them. No, you do not file the forms with the lawyer or anything. In each case, I tell you what you do with the form. Some of them you have to file with the state, like an LLC or something. No, you don't need another attorney to do it.
Okay.
You file them with the state. We're going to have to ship a number of them, and I think we can ship them immediately. I was going to ship a bunch here, but we didn't have binders. And would you believe that they said that the supply chain hasn't gotten them binders yet? Yeah, they're still doing the vinyl in China or whatever it is. Yeah, you're right.
Are you going to spend this past the next 10 minutes only because of...
Yeah. Tom will be okay.
All right.
Fill out the form now. And
do you think that we need to put a business name as the name?
If you can put a business name up at the top, do that, okay?
And you're not doing this anymore this weekend, are you?
No, this is my only speech. So you won't get another nap.
Can we buy this down at the bookstore?
Do it here, because what I'm going to do is initial each one of these for the advanced tax tactics.
Okay.
Because they don't know that's coming.
Okay.
I think if we get in this room, they're going to make us a room right here that we can be in. That's up to Aurea. I don't know. It's okay with me if it's okay with them.
Okay, is that Aurea?
They're in charge of the money.
Aurea.
If we're in this room, are we okay? Okay. Okay. Yes.
When I buy the system, and he has...
Hey, everybody. All right, Lee has a mic. I don't. Listen up.
My mic's not on. But
okay.
I'll give it to you. How does
you
that sound?
You guys know where the bookstore is. Okay, Colleen, raise your hand, Colleen.
Hi.
Is going to squeeze out the door. She's going to lead you to the bookstore so we can finish getting your forms filled out, get you squared away with Lee.
I'll go with you. We'll just pretend like we're here. How does
follow
that sound?
Follow Lee. Okay. Colleen will lead Lee over
but
there.
But I do have a 4 o'clock airplane, so I am going to
okay.
Wait.
And we promise Lee will hang out there as long as he needs to.
Are the forms over there?
Oh.
You got it.
Thank you.
Where are the forms?
Okay. We'll get them straight away. We'll take go to the bookstore with them. Everyone there will take care of it. I think they're going to need some help. Anyone who can help as a volunteer? Who's talking here? What? Oh, that would be a fun one, actually.
I know.
Bad split. This mic, I took off of Lee.
Ah, good. That's just what I was coming for.
Okay. Anybody else I need to clear out while we're at it?
I don't know. Apparently, some of the lunch tickets were misprinted. So they're saying, like it says, rooms that it's printed as if they were unified that we're now subdividing.
Oh, fine.
So there's a little chaos going on there. What?
Are we over there?
They haven't flipped the chairs. and I'm tempted just not to do it. I mean, it's a lunch presentation, you know, and these guys are already pretty busy. I don't know, go do a lap and tell me what you think. So, and were we running Lee off of this unit?
Yes.
So this belong. This is what Lee was wearing, and it belongs here. Okay. Hey. All right, and you're doing what?
So I'm on three.
Okay.
Investor loan source.
Okay.
And I do have a PowerPoint. Yes, sir. I do have a PowerPoint. Sweet. I'll let you put that down.
All right. And it's not going to... Have you already disconnected that wireless receiver?
Yep.
You're just on top of
my cable.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not a tech guy. Yeah, I think it was
in that
there
you hall. Go.
There we go.
Good.
That is clearly my weakness.
Perfect. The other guy was terrified, and he's like, I don't know how to connect. And I looked at his machine, and I'm like, you have an HDMI connection. Dude, that's the simplest thing in the world.
You're over fine. There?
No, this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And Henry.
Mike,
finding, seeking. There, boom.
Boom.
All right, do you know how to put this in presentation mode?
Yes.
Okay.
That I can do. Slideshow. Play from start.
Well, no, there's actually, if you're familiar with it, if it would be helpful to you, let me show you something real quick. They took the escape button away. I have an older Mac.
Yeah.
So there's supposed to be an escape button right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so down here, see this little button right here?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what that's going to do, what it should do, oh, reverse.
I'm going to pull my cord just a little bit, just to make sure I don't step on it with the wall here. Thank you. Thank you, I appreciate that.
Tom, what's your last name again?
Berry, B-E-R-R-Y.
Moved to Texas. I'm a real estate investor first and a lender second. And that should be good.
Anything about what you're lending?
No, I'll get into that.
Okay.
Make it short and sweet.
Got it.
Make it easy on you. Testing 1, 2.
Okay, so it's got the monitors reversed. The setting I was looking for was to tell it no, switch A and B because it's showing you the presenter view on that screen.
I'm gonna drag this over and see if we can set it up here.
Okay. Can we?
Can we do that? How's that?
Fine.
Okay, I'm going to...
So, there is... I'm sorry, like I said, I've got...
That's all right. I'm going to try this again.
Yeah, so it's showing the preview over there. On mine, we should be able to... Here's our PowerPoint.
Can we just eliminate the presenter view entirely and go back to where that
so
I had it?
Just straight mirror?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to do that too.
You want to do custom?
Oh, well, that's good enough. I'll run with it.
No. We've got time to fix
you
it.
You sure?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they're going to kick me off at 1, and okay. I'm not going to be like that guy.
Give me 30 more seconds.
Okay.
Flannery, can you come to 3 real quick to slap me in the head? As many as it takes.
I see one more thing here. I know it was down here. Slide sorter, reading view, slide view. It works. Good enough.
Okay.
Let's roll.
Let's put a mic on you.
I got it.
Oh, you already got it?
Yeah, well, I had it,
and I flipped it right off of there.
So, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
My name is Jeff Rickman. I'm the president of Obrea. It's really hot to see everyone here. I hope you guys are having a good time. I hope you guys are learning a lot. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce to you Tom Berry. He is here. He is originally an Ohio resident who then moved to Texas. He's a real estate investor first. And secondly, he is a lender. So, Tom, thanks so much for buying everyone lunch. Glad to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Let me get this name tag off of me here. Here we go. All right. How's everybody doing today?
Great.
All right. Everybody got their lunch? Yeah, got your lunch? You're ready to go? All right. So I apologize. You're going to hear me blabbering through your lunch, but hopefully I can make it a little bit entertaining for you. As the introduction said, I am originally here from Ohio. I did my first 39 years here, then moved to Texas, and we started actually real estate investing in Texas. We didn't really do that here in Ohio. My wife and I, like most people, started with single-family properties. We started, you know, fix and flip. Actually, we started as wholesalers, and then we started fix and flipping, and then we started, a rental portfolio of houses. And we got to about 38 houses, and I said, you know what? In order to get to my goal, right? How many of you have a goal, what you want to get to eventually, right? So in order for me to get to my goal, I'm like, man, this is going to take forever, right? Because it took me 3 years to get to 38 houses. And I'm like, gosh, I wanted to get to 400 units. So if it took me 3 years to get to 38 houses, how long is it going to take me to get to 400 units? So I said, you know what? I need to collapse time frames here. I need to get some vehicle where we can get to that 400 goal much faster. And I decided to look at commercial real estate ultimately we were just looking at apartments because single families and apartments really have a lot of similarities, right? There's really not a lot extra you have to learn going from a single family to apartments. And so that was something that I was comfortable with. But over the course of the next year and a half, we went from 36 residential units to 426 residential units. And we did that through using apartments. And once we got into apartments and we started understanding the dynamics and the finance of apartments, I learned a few things that I want to share with you today, because once you learn apartments, you can do any commercial asset class you want to do. So we went on to do self-storage, and we did office, and we did, what else did we do? Single-tenant commercial. We did a little bit of light industrial. We've done retail. But really, cutting our teeth on those little apartment deals was the catalyst for that. So I'd just like to go through and share some case studies with you on how we went from those single family deals into the larger commercial deals. Anybody want to hear about that? Yeah? Okay, cool. By the way, I don't have anything to sell you. Nothing. Nothing. Unless you want a loan. I could do a loan for you, but I have nothing to sell you. I have no class, no package, nothing at the end to sell you. So relax, eat your food, and I'll try to be as entertaining as I can. So first of all, let's talk about what is commercial real estate. It's a really simple definition, right? If we're talking about residential real estate, we're talking about a 5-unit property or more, right? So a fourplex really falls under the single family 1-4 category. But if you get to 5, now you're talking about commercial real estate. So a 5-unit, a 12-unit, an 80-unit, a 300-unit, those would all be commercial. And anything that is not residential use, regardless of the size. So any office building, any strip center, any retail, those would also be considered commercial. So when we talk about commercial, a lot of times people have this idea, I was talking to a lot of folks over at our table. We have a booth over there for our lending company. And a lot of times I would ask, what are you working on? And they say, I do houses. I do BRRRR, right? Buy, rehab, refi, repeat, right? Or something like that. I'll probably get that wrong, but basically it's single family rental, right? Single family rental. And so I just like to test people. So I say, so have you played with any commercial yet? Oh, no. I've got to get this residential down first. Or, oh, no, that's too big for me. Guys, I want to show you my first commercial. This is the one that I cut my teeth on, and I realized that I could actually do commercial. This is a 5-unit in Galveston, Texas. It was built by the guy that sold it to me. His dad built the property, built it from the slab up. The guy I bought it from was 82 years old when I bought it. He was a tired landlord. Any of you know what that means, right? And by the way, yeah, you may be a tired one yourself, right? So, and by the way, with all of the moratoriums that we've been through over the last year and a half to 2 years, do you think there might be any tired landlords out there right now that have said, screw this, I thought I owned my property. What do you mean I got to let people live in it for free when I still got to pay my bills, right? I think tired landlords is going to be one of the biggest growth areas for deal flow that we see over the next 2 years. It already is, actually, in a lot of places. So we were able to pick this thing up from this older fella. 3 of the units were rented. 2 of them were not. And they were rented for $500 each for 2 of them, and 1 of them was rented for $400 each. And the 2.5 of them needed major rehab, what I call major rehab, almost to the studs and start over. So that's what we would call in the commercial realm a value play, meaning I can add value to this property. Well, if y'all are doing fix and flip or you've ever bought an ugly house and cleaned it up to put a tenant in, guess what? You're doing value plays. You just didn't know the term probably because they only use it in commercial. So this is what we call a value play, and honestly, there's nothing here that money couldn't fix. We did a complete exterior rehab. You could see the old siding on it was getting old. That old T111 was getting rotten. And this is a barrier island, for those of you that are not familiar with South Texas. So the salt water is in the air constantly, and it just rotted that old T111 right out. It was not the right type of exterior for that particular area. We fix it all up. Now the seller's asking $165,000 for it. We ended up buying it for $95,000. And where did I get the money? From a private lender. I didn't go to a bank and get it because the bank wouldn't have lent on this ugly thing. So we got the deal. We bought it. We owe $165,000. Yes, I got 100% of it financed with my private lender. I didn't have to put any of my own money in the deal. And that's what it looked like 4 months later. I know it's an ugly color in Ohio, but on a barrier island, that color actually is cool, okay? I know here in Cincinnati area, that would be considered ugly, but pastels are actually in on the coast. So we hold it for 4 years. We sell it for $315,000. Right? Now, who could do that? Those of you that invest in single family homes, everybody could do that. Those numbers are small enough that that shouldn't scare anybody. Right? And that was literally our first commercial deal. We did another little fiveplex the same month we did that one. And then the next one we did 4 months later was this 36 unit, also in Galveston. 36 unit, had a pool, four buildings. And honestly, when I walked on this property, I thought, oh my gosh, this is so huge, right? It really wasn't huge. Just think of, okay, you got four multifamily buildings, that's all. It really wasn't that big of a deal. But it was when we were doing it. Looking back, I'm like, okay. So these are the pictures before. Again, the Pepto-Bismol pink, it was in at the time. We purchased it for $555,000, had another $95,000 in rehab costs. Now, I learn a lot of things as I go. I'm one of those ready, shoot, aim kind of guys, right? Anybody in here like me? Okay, three of us, all right. The rest of you are more detail-oriented. That's okay. So I really undershot the rehab budget on this thing, right? $95,000 was not enough, but here's the deal. When you buy, if you buy right, it can cover every other mistake you make, right? Within 3 months, we were already profitable, and I was making $4,000 to $5,000 to $6,000, depending on which month we're talking about, a month in pure extra cash after all expenses. And we just used that money to continue the rehab. And over the course of 6 months, we had it completely rehabbed. And we weren't really highly leveraged in it at all. As you can see, we only owed $650,000 on it. Once we got it all done, it was cash flowing $7,000 to $8,000 a month for us. Now think about that. How many single families do you need to cash flow $7,000 to $8,000 a month, right? Too many, right? And it's all in one location. It's four roofs, right? It's 36 houses all in one location. It's easy to manage. We made a little management office. It was a tiny little, almost a closet type thing with a bathroom. And I put a manager in there, and she managed everything, so I didn't have to. And then we bought other properties on the island, and she managed them too from that property. So that's the beauty of commercial. 4 months later, we're at 82% occupancy. Okay, and I learned a valuable lesson. When you're buying an alligator, this was what we call an alligator. When we bought it, it was 13% occupied. So what is an alligator? It's something that eats your money every month, right? We want things that pay us money every month. And once we got up into the 80s, you know, occupancy-wise, it did pay us. But at 13, you can imagine it was eating about $10,000 to $12,000 a month. So if you're buying an alligator, and I highly recommend it if you can buy them right, that's the way we buy houses. We buy the ugly, we buy the nasty, we buy the vacant. You can do that with commercial as well, but understand what you're going to lose a month from the time you buy it to the time you get it stabilized, and make sure that you have that capital set aside. Another thing I learned the hard way on that particular property, I did not have that. Fortunately, we bought it so deep that we were profitable quickly, and it didn't kill me. That's what it looked like 4 months later. And July 2015, we sold it for $1.3 million, over twice what we had in the property. And it still paid us that $7,000 to $8,000 a month, every month we owned it. Now, at this point, some people would ask me, well, why did you sell it then? If it was paying you that kind of money, why wouldn't you hold on to the property? This property was built in 1965. Anybody ever have an old car that every once in a while, you know, at a certain point in its life cycle, it starts nickel and diming you, and you just know at some point it's going to have major issues, and that's when you go to the dealership and you decide to trade that turkey off, right? Real estate is a lot that way too, I have found. So every year in October, my wife and I go through our portfolio, and we say, which ones are we going to cull out? Which ones are we going to cull out? Y'all know what that means, right? Cull? I own a hunting ranch in Texas, so we cull, right? if there's something in there that doesn't quite belong, it's not going to be a trophy, it's not going to be nice, genetics are messed up, you cull that one out. Well, we do the same thing with our rental portfolio. If the genetics ain't right in that particular property, it's gone. And we try to do that in the first or second quarter of the following year. We're absolutely on target to cull all of our October properties by the end of the year this year. I'm really adamant right now to get rid of the turkeys. I think oftentimes when we start in a real estate, we set our goals, right? I asked earlier, how many of you have goals of where you want to get to? And most of you raised your hand. But we can't allow the goal of getting to a certain number of units to override the common sense of getting rid of the crap along the way. Does that make sense? Because we're all going to get one. We're all going to get one or two or how many ever of the ones that we wish we hadn't got. Well, there is a fix for that. It's called forget about the numbers and just put the damn thing up for sale and get rid of it. Get rid of the headache before it becomes the headache. So a lot of times people say, well, how do you get a deal? How do you get these commercial deals? I would say right now is a great time to start networking with other real estate investors and tell them that you are a commercial buyer. Even if you have not done it yet, if you want to, get the word out that you are a commercial buyer. Because in your circle, I guarantee there aren't very many people that are saying that. Everybody is saying, I buy houses, I buy houses, I buy houses, I buy houses. There's like 50,000 of you trying to, I buy houses in the same damn market, isn't there? Right? All these flipping shows and all these gurus that roll through town, they're churning out students left and right. I will tell you, in the commercial side, you're not going to experience that kind of competition. You could be the only guy or the only gal in your area that is saying, I buy commercial property. I buy commercial property. You'll stand out. And one of the other things that you'll want to do that's maybe different than houses is network with brokers. Network with commercial brokers and realtors, particularly realtors, because they don't know what to do. No offense to realtors. I am a licensed realtor, but I don't practice that way. I just use it for the access. One of the things that realtors don't know how to do is they don't know what to do with a commercial property when they get it, especially small commercial. They don't want to go to a commercial broker because commercial broker doesn't want those, right? The $200,000 to $400,000 little commercial deal. So those end up getting, realtors end up getting those calls and they have nowhere to go with them. In fact, in our area, they're not even supposed to put them on our MLS. That's supposed to go into a whole different category, which costs the realtor a lot of money to belong to that category of the MLS, the commercial side. We call it Commercial Gateway in Houston. And so it costs them like $1,500. Well, no realtor is going to do that if they don't do a lot of commercial real estate. So you can really get ahead of your competition by networking with those realtors and just letting them know, hey, you ever get a small commercial deal, let me know. One of the next ones we did after that was this one. This is a 64-unit apartment complex. By the time we had done the little fives, we did a 10. I'll answer in a minute. We did a 12. We did a 13. We did a 22. And then we did this 64. Well, honestly, once you get, you know, it's kind of like your first house. You're scary. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I can do this. It looked fun on TV, but, you know, I don't know. It's the same way with commercial. Once you get a couple of them under your belt, you'll realize it's not really as scary as it looked. And the first time you do a deal that has millions in the number, that's another scary, scary, scary prospect, okay? But once you do it, it's like, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. I can do million-dollar deals. We purchased this one from a bank, $1.750, and the bank wanted rid of it really bad. We knew they wanted rid of it because they were merging. Two banks were merging, and this was their biggest non-performing note on their books. And the the merger was dependent on them getting their non-performing notes down to a certain level. Getting this one off the books would have helped them do that in one transaction. So I used that, and I negotiated 90% financing at 3.8% interest with 2 years interest only on the note. Now, any other day, any other deal, any other bank, there is no way they would have took that deal. You're laughing. You know they would not have took that deal. But I understood the background on it, and they took the deal. 2 years later, we're completely rehabbed. We're all filled up. We kept it for 32 months. Now, I brought in an equity partner, so I didn't have to put any of my own money in. So I borrowed, I had an equity partner put $430,000 in the kitty, and for that, I gave him 40% of the deal. And I ran the whole transaction. He was a silent partner in the deal. So I've got zero money in the deal. 32 months later, we sell it for $2.7 million. Plus all the cash flow that we enjoyed that 32 months that we had it. Actually, there was no cash flow about the first year. It was an alligator also. It was eating money the first year. But after 12 months, we're back up to where it's profitable, and we rode it for another couple of years. This is one we bought just last year. Last year. So I'm an equal opportunity buyer of commercial property. This, the realtor put it on HAR, which is our multiple listing service in Houston, accidentally. She didn't even know she wasn't allowed to do it. But she didn't know what to do with a commercial property. Back to my original story. You want to network with every realtor in your area if you want to get into commercial. Because let them know you buy commercial. Most of them have no place to go with something like that. I bought it for $65,000. It's just a simple little, it used to be an air conditioning and heating shop that they ran out of it. I did absolutely nothing to it. We sent our maintenance man over with a truck and a trailer. He cleaned it out. He painted the front, the facade, and that is it. That is all he did. And he hung that banner up. And within 3-4 months, we get a call from somebody that says, hey, I'd like to put a tower shop in there. And I said, do you want to rent it? Do you want to rent to own it? Or do you want to own, or you want to buy it, owner finance, or you just want to buy it? I don't care what you do. You know, I'll work with you. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. It's cash flow either way. And he says, I'd like to buy it, but I don't want to pay the payments to you. Perfect. My underlying lien is at this interest rate. His is at this interest rate. So not only did I get the spread on the $65,000 that I paid for it and the $135,000 that I sold it for, but I also get the spread between the interest rates. I'm cool with that. He can pay me off at any time he wants. But when you hear somebody talk about investing in commercial real estate, don't think that it has to be millions of dollars. That's a $65,000 deal, right? Anybody can do that, and nobody is. There's no competition in it. None. That same exact month we bought that one. I'm an equal opportunity commercial buyer. One was $65,000, one was $12.6. I don't care. They both make money. They both, you can make money with commercial regardless of how big or how small the deal is. Obviously, we didn't start at that. And by the way, when you do multi-million dollar deals and there's an extra digit, that's even scarier yet. And we were scared, me and my business partner, I did this with a partner, we were scared for a month. Oh my gosh, is this going to work? Oh my gosh, I don't know. How many of you have a Quest Trust account through Quest IRA in Houston? They're in that building. They're our biggest tenant. They're our biggest tenant in the building. I wanted in this building because of Quest. We raise an enormous amount of capital from self-directed IRA holders at Quest. And I wanted our office to be in that building with them because we probably have $36 million of their of y'all's money in our funds through Quest. But it was always full. Solution? It came up for sale. I bought it. I non-renewed somebody's lease, and we're in suite 210 now. So If you ever come to Houston and you want to visit your IRA custodian, come up to 210 and you can visit us as well. There are two. So now let's talk about the funding for these things. I've shared with you some of the different things that you can do with commercial. I got about 14 minutes left, and I will not be like the guy before me. I will be on time, and I'll get you out of here the way we should. There are two types of funding for these: debt-based funding and equity-based funding. Again, same as houses, right? Debt-based funding. What is that? You go get a loan. That's called debt-based funding. You get a loan. Well, who would lend on this kind of stuff? Remember I said I don't have anything to sell you unless you want a loan, right? I will do a loan for you because I understand commercial real estate. I am an investor of commercial real estate, and I own a lending company. Why would I not lend on it? Well, I would. And we do an enormous amount of commercial lending on these types of deals. The other way that I raised a lot of capital when I was doing my apartment complexes is through equity-based funding. Remember I told you one of those deals, I brought in a partner. He gave me $430. He didn't give it to me. He put it in the kitty, meaning he put it in the LLC we created to purchase that single asset. But he put $430,000 in. My wife and I put $10 in. And we owned 60% of the deal, and he owned 40% of the deal. Does that sound fair? It was very fair. It was very fair. His return was over 20% annualized when we paid it off. And the first thing he said to me is, let's go do it again, right? The problem with that is the market had closed. Real estate market is just like the stock market. It opens and it closes at various times. And the market for us to buy those apartment complexes had closed. It was now becoming time to sell them. Does that make sense? So rather than he and I going out and buying another apartment complex, we started a lending company. And he is my 50-50 partner in our lending company now. So equity deals are fantastic. Debt deals are fantastic. There is no right or wrong. There is no one's better than the other. I can tell you that the norm, right, if there is such a thing as a norm, it's deals that are typically under $1 million are typically, I'm going to keep throwing that word in there, going to be debt deals. They're just going to be loans, right? And deals that are over $1 million typically will go equity. But yet we did that 12.6 and it was just a debt deal. So that's an outlier. We didn't bring in partners. We didn't syndicate it. So there is no right or wrong. It's what makes sense for that deal, what makes sense for the participants. When somebody comes to me and needs funding for these types of transactions, we do debt. That's all we do. I don't want your equity. I don't want a piece of your action. I want you to go make good money. I want my interest rate, and I'm going to take my fees, but that's all I want. You get to keep it all, and hopefully you keep doing it again and again and again. So, other places you can find the funding. One of the top places I found funding when I've been doing these types of deals is the seller. I will make multiple offers to the seller. I bought my hunting ranch this way. The guy, you know, do some research on your sellers. It's amazing how many people don't do that. So I found out who the seller was, and I looked him up on the internet. I found out he had a net worth of, according to the internet, of over $50 million. I found out he was an oil and gas guy. He owned his own company in Houston, blah, 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 socialite. I read there was tons of stuff online. I found out I got right in this guy's head. And I'm like, okay, I want this ranch, but I'm going to make multiple offers because I want to force him to take the one I want. Y'all understand, right? So he wanted, if I can remember the numbers, he wanted $1.3 million for the ranch. So I made him two offers. I made him a $900,000 cash, closing 30 days offer, which I was sweating, hoping he didn't take that one because I had no idea where I was going to freaking get that. But But if he had taken it, I would have got it. I would have put it together quick, right? Because at that, you know, it would have been a hell of a deal, right? So the deal attracts the capital. Y'all write that down if you're taking notes. The deal attracts the capital. If you're having trouble raising capital for your deal, it's because you didn't get it low enough. Period. Because right now there's trillions and trillions of dollars sloshing around in the economy looking for a yield. And they're just looking for a good deal. If you've got a good deal, you will get the money, period. So then I also offered them $1.1 million with 20% cash down, the other 80% at 5% interest, amortized over 20 years with a five-year balloon. And this is what the broker told me when he presented the offers. He presented the $900 first, and the guy said words that he wouldn't tell me. And then he presented the 1.1 with seller financing attached. And he's like, he's willing to give me 5%? That was his exact words. Now, how many of us wouldn't have even had the guts to offer that low of a percentage, right? Because we're used to hard money and private money numbers and, right? I offered him 5% and he thought that was too much. He's like, I can't get 5% anywhere. Let me check the guy out. But if he checks out, hell yeah, I'll take that one. That's close enough. So never be embarrassed to offer a seller finance offer. My opinion is you offer two offers and make your cash offer so horrible they don't want it. And it kind of pushes. You can always come back and renegotiate if it doesn't work, right? But that is a trick that I have been able to use multiple times. You can use local banks if you qualify for that and the deal qualifies for that. The problem with us was I didn't qualify and neither did my properties typically. Because I was buying alligators. I was buying ugly, busted up, distressed assets. And in a bank, I don't care how good you look, they're not going to typically look at those. And then on top of that, I've been self-employed for 23 years. I haven't had a freaking W-2 in, decades. And banks don't like that either. So, and then all I do is real estate. It's all I've done for the last 15 years, which means I make, some years, I make millions of dollars and my tax return says I made 60 grand. Because there's this thing called depreciation, right? Y'all understand, I've showed you buildings and stuff that we own. Can you imagine the depreciation we get to throw on our tax return every year off of these things? So we literally walk into the bank looking like paupers, even though we take a vacation a month and have zero debt, right? But the banker, they don't. So there are many reasons somebody will not qualify for a bank loan. Doesn't mean you're bad. Doesn't mean you don't know what you're doing. Doesn't mean you shouldn't have the loan. And we understand that. We completely understand that. In fact, we don't even ask to see your tax returns or your pay stubs because I couldn't care less. Then you've got private lenders. We've done a lot with private lenders. I mentioned Quest Trust. Equity Trust is also here. Both of them have booths. If you don't know these people, you need to get to know them because they have lots and lots of money. I'm very familiar with Quest, obviously, because I know the owners very well and they're good friends of ours. I know that they manage $2.5 billion with a B dollars right now in self-directed accounts. I also know that at any given time, 12 to 18% of that is sitting in cash making zero. You can do the math on that later, but it's more than all of us in this room need to build a phenomenal real estate portfolio. Would you agree? You know, somebody told me if you want to get hit by a train, it's easy. All you got to do is stand on the tracks, right? That's common sense. I don't want to get hit by a train. I want to get hit by money. So I go stand on the money tracks, which is why we bought that building. That was the money tracks. There's $2.5 billion in accounts on the first floor of that building. Well, you have access to that too. Talk to people. Talk to them about what you're doing and explain to them how you can help them make money while you're making money. I always say, let's make money together, right? It's got to be a win-win situation. from me and my partners, me and my investors, or me and my lenders. We got to both make money because I want to go do it over and over and over again. I don't take the short view. I take the long view on real estate. And now we're buying other things. We're buying businesses. We have a meat processing plant under contract right now. It does have a real estate component, but actually that's the smallest component of that particular endeavor. I love single families, love single family homes. It got me going. It got me in the business. And by the way, I have four adult children. All of them work in our businesses, and we're teaching them to do the exact same thing we did. They're helping us in our companies, various positions, and all of them are investors as well. I believe in this stuff more than you can imagine. It's changed not my life, but my family tree. It has literally changed my family tree. My 7.5 grandkids are growing up. Yes, there's one more on the way. Don't count him or her yet as a whole grandkid, but will be shortly. But all of our grandkids are growing up in this as well. They're all growing up in this, and they're all going to learn the single family stuff. But here's the message I want to give you today, is you don't have to stay with single family. You don't have to stay with addition, right? If you want to get to a large number, do you want addition or multiplication? You want multiplication. And commercial affords you more zeros. It just affords you more zeros. I'm not saying you got to jump out there from single family into a $3 million deal. That would be silly. Maybe even stupid. I don't know. Depends on the deal. But start with some small ones. Start with some couple $100,000 deals. Get your feet wet. Learn the terminology. Get into it. Get into the network. It's a whole different network of people that you'll get into. And then you'll get the confidence to get into larger and larger deals with even more zeros. Does that make sense? So keys to success. Define your avatar. What does that mean? I would say the first thing I would do if I were thinking about adding commercial to my portfolio is I would sit down and define what it is I want to buy. Now, defining that avatar, there are multiple ways that you will want to do that. First of all, let's start with geography. I will only buy a commercial asset in this area. And define that. You can make it as tight or as large as you want. When we started, my wife and I, we started in a 5-county radius. We quickly brought it down to 1. Okay? Because we were scattered. We were scattered too much. Now, our radius is 18 states. I will lend in any of 18 states that we have identified that we will buy in or lend in. We'll do either one. Ohio is one of them. Actually, it's our number 2 state. Yes. Second only to Texas, our home state. So define your avatar. First is geography. Second is asset class. When we started, we will buy apartments and apartment complexes in Galveston County, Texas. Right? Next thing would be what class. If you're going to do apartments, you might do something other than that. That was just our first avatar. And that will change over time. As you get familiar and you get comfortable with doing other things, your avatar will change over time. But the next thing I would say is what price point, what price range am I going to stay in? That's the next thing on your avatar. And then finally, how heavy a lift? How heavy a lift am I willing to do? Meaning, how busted up, how ugly, how vacant am I willing to do? And with those four things, you're going to have a really good understanding of what it is you're looking for. Because here's the thing. A lot of people will say, well, I buy real estate. Well, what do you buy? Oh, anything. Okay, you're not going to buy anything then. Really. You got to know what you... I mean, I'm a hunter, right? But I don't just walk in a woods and say, I'm hunting today. What are you hunting? I don't care. I'd come back empty-handed. I'd be skinny and scrawny, right? Because I wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't have anything to show for it. You go hunting, you got to know what you're after. You got to know where to go. Where do they hang out? Where do they feed? Where do they bed? You got to know what kind of weapon to take. You got to know what kind of ammo to take. All of those things is the same in real estate. I hunt a lot of things. We'll do that. We'll talk about that at the table. So define your avatar and focus, hone in on what it is you're going to go after. This is my contact info. I'm 1 minute over. I apologize if I've held up anybody to the next session. If anybody wants to come and ask questions, I'm happy to take questions. But that was the presentation. I hope it was entertaining for you and also informational. You had a question. I'll take it now. Yeah, so that's a great question, and there's two things that led to apartments being our first target, right? The first one is they were the most similar to houses, right? They all have the same components that houses do, and we had done 38 of those that we had kept, and we had flipped a bunch on top of that. We had wholesaled even more of that. So we were just very familiar and comfortable. It was all about comfort. Right? We were comfortable with the components of a single family home, where I was not comfortable with the components of other asset classes. The second thing that led us to that is when you look at commercial assets, there is a hierarchy, and that hierarchy is based on the management intensity of the asset. So, the highest management intensity is going to pay the most to own. Now, think of yourself as an investor sitting here with $1 million, and you're going to invest that $1 million. The hardest thing to manage is going to be what? Apartments. In particular, then apartments has subcategories of A class, B class, C class, and then D class or no class, right? And which of those do you think is the most management intensive? Right? The no class or D class, right? So which ones pay the most? Apartments pay the most. Now, when I say pay the most, what do I mean? It means you can buy them at the lowest price per income. Or in commercial, we use the term cap rate, capitalization rate. So you're going to be able to buy apartments typically at a higher cap rate, which means lower price, than, say, a strip center on a really good road that has always been full, and the tenants are all national credit tenants, and they sign 10 to 15-year leases. How much management intensity do you think you have there? Oh, and by the way, it's triple net leased. There's no management, literally no management to that asset. So you understand you're not going to get that asset for the same price to NOI as you can that C-class apartment complex. Because there's a heck of a lot more management intensity over here. So the second reason we started with apartments is they paid more. Not only we were familiar with the components of them, but it was where the money was. Now, in my life, I don't care about that as much as I do playing with my grandkids and traveling. So I would never, ever buy another C-class apartment complex as long as I live. But I highly recommend y'all to do it because it changed my life and made me a multimillionaire from nothing. So that is why you would choose that. Yes, sir. What are you looking at there? Oh, you're looking at our loan sheet. DSCR means debt service coverage ratio. It's a term that banks and lenders use to make sure, in your terminology, you would call it cash flow. A lender wants to make sure you're positive cash flowing at least 1.15 or 1.25. Every lender is different. They want to make sure that you're cash flowing and you're not going negative every month, because if you're going negative, the chance of making your payment is less, right? That's what DSCR means. Yes, sir. Yeah. So, let me share with you the three biggest problems we ran into. so that you'll be on the lookout for those if you decide to do something like this. The first problem was scaling the rehab, because I used my single family crew, Jose, and he had four guys, and they would come in and do my single families in short order, right? But then when you have it a complex like that, well, it takes a little longer. Now, the beauty is these units don't take as long as a single family to rehab because I only got one exterior. That's pretty easy. And the interiors, they're small. You know, most of them are 600, 700, 800 square foot at most. So what I did is I told Jose, I said, look, let's put together more crews. Let's put together more guys and I will pay you more because you're managing more people. And he went out into the market, into the trades, and he brought more guys on. So we had to scale up his crew. He didn't know how to do that. You know, he knows how to wrench, right? He knows how to wrench. But I kind of helped him to scale up his crew so that he could do our apartments quickly. Now, another trick that we used is we never kicked anybody out to rehab their unit. We just rehabbed the vacant ones. Right. And as they vacate, then you take that one and rehab it. But you're raising the rates on the rehabbed ones immensely in most cases versus the ones that they've been in there for 10 years and it's never been touched. Right. I'm sorry. We did not move tenants. No, no. Disruption, especially in apartments, is detrimental to your community. It's detrimental to your apartment community. So we would leave them there. Yeah. Yeah, unless they say, and we had that. You know, I had people move themselves. They'd take a peek in the new ones and go, well, Tom, can I move in that one? Sure, for the right price, right? Yeah. Yes, ma'am. I do not own a single apartment unit today, I'm proud to say. Thank you, folks. I'm sure I'm being kicked out now. No? Don't need this room? I got two more minutes. Okay. Yes, ma'am. No, that varies with the credit markets, the capital markets. Right now, non-recourse loans are pretty non-existent. I say pretty. You can find them here and there, but you've got to be real strong borrower. I mean, very strong. Capital-wise, lots of cash stashed. Non-recourse loans are... Yeah. There are some. Look, there are some out there, but I can tell you on that big building, we signed recourse. We signed recourse to get the terms we wanted. Yeah. Thank you very much, folks. It was a pleasure talking with y'all. If you have any more questions, I'll be over at the table here today and tomorrow.